Did you know we're running a convention? That's right, Nerd and Tie is running the Nerd and Tie Expo, September 23rd through 25th, 2016, in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, at the Plaza Hotel and Suites. Pre-registration is just $30, and you can go do that now at expo.nerdandtie.com. Tickets are limited, but awesomeness is infinite.
On this episode of Nerd and Tie, the new Godzilla looks horrifying. CBS and Paramount are suing Axanar, a Star Trek fan film. Star Wars has broken numerous records, making all of the money in the world. Hasbro is reneging on their Rey debacle in the Star Wars Monopoly set. And No Boys Dorm is here, and we're going to talk about it, all this and more, on Nerd and Tie.
It's exciting.
It is exciting. Hey, everybody, welcome to Nerd and Tie, the only podcast on the internet with S code. I am one of your hosts, Professor Firsters, and with me, as always, is the very sparkly Nick Azumi.
Everybody likes me, except when they don't.
And the fluorescent Trey Dorn.
Nobody likes me, except for when they do.
And, man,
what?
Whatever, I don't know.
I was inverting what Nick said. It was the thing.
I get what you're doing. I get it. No, everybody, welcome to the show.
Damn.
We're excited to be here. We're very, very happy to be with you this fortnight, as we've been every fortnight for the past...
Since summer of 2013?
Since every fortnight since summer of 2013. And we're going to just keep on rolling because that's what we do here at Nerd
we
and
are.
Tie.
That's Gang what we do. Straight. We keep going forever.
Keep going no matter what's happening.
And for those of you who only listen to the podcast, you know, last week we put out the first episode of something called The Off Week on the YouTube channel. And so you should watch that. And look at all the angry dude bros I pissed off in the comments.
It's hysterical.
They like to come in and downvote. They've been downvoting the video, which is hilarious.
That's okay.
And downvoting my comments. And I just like, I could ban them immediately if I wanted to. But every time they come to angrily post on the comment, they have to look at the ad, which makes us money. So, dude, bros, when you say mean things about me on my video, you're still making me money.
I kind of want to see what they're writing, but I feel like I've already read the comment section on my Valvrave video, so I kind of know where it's heading already.
The latest guy told me that I shouldn't compare Rey to Luke Skywalker. So, you know, because comparing Force users in Star Wars is apparently something you can't do.
I am really sick of people telling me that I can't compare something that is obviously related to something else. I'm sorry, I'm going to go off on a side tangent. Everyone who has told me, you can't say that the Great Gatsby film isn't good because you're comparing it to the book. It's unfair to compare it to the book. Don't make an adaptation then. Well, same with Watchmen. Don't make an adaptation then.
It's unfair to say it's bad compared to the book because The Great Gatsby is an awful book. So it's really
I
what
heartily
it comes
disagree,
down to.
If only because I was named after that book.
It's not your fault, Nick. Nick, it's not your fault.
I'm just saying it's. I'm really sick of hearing this bizarre argument in nerddom of you can't compare the depictions of characters in Full Metal Alchemist to Brotherhood. They're two different things, except they're both Full Metal Alchemist. Shut up.
It's the same character. Okay. So, I do want to get this out of the way at the beginning of the episode because this is the first episode since.
I'm sure a lot
announced.
Of people are probably listening. Like, are they going to talk about it?
It is true that I am. Currently being sued for articles written for Nerd and Tie by Mr. Ryan L. Kopf of Iowa. And we're not going to address that on the podcast. We've written about it mildly, very briefly, as much as we're willing to talk about it publicly. We are running a legal fund. There's a GoFundMe campaign. We'll put the link in the show notes to pay for my legal services, but that's it. That's all we're going to talk about it because... not going to comment on the contents of an ongoing litigation.
Because we're smart.
That's too much of a comment. Shut up. All right. Also, for those of you who like me and support me, that is great, but leave other people alone.
Yeah.
Anyways,
Let's get on with this episode.
Speaking of scary things, Nick.
Speaking of things that are horrifying.
So we got our first look at Godzilla for the new Japanese Godzilla resurgence, the Shin Godzilla look. All I can say to Hideaki Anno and Shinji Higuchi is, holy gods, that's horrifying.
Right?
Like in the good way, though, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No,
like, let's be clear, because, like, Attack on Titan is horrifying in live action for very different reasons, in the sense that you feel horrified that you're having to stare at it. So when the same special effects team are designing a new Godzilla, it's important to...
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's the thing. Like, I've seen a lot of G fans. Well, here's the thing. Godzilla fans are almost entirely impossible to please. A lot of people are already taking a crap on this design. Not me. I love this new design. It looks like it's a lizard made of cancer burns. Really, it's everything about this new Godzilla just sends tingles down my spine. When I first saw it, I was shaken and uncomfortable, and I had to look away from it. And then I looked back at the details, and yeah, this was the right choice. It's jagged teeth going off in every direction. It's burned skin. It's deformed arms.
It looks great and terrifying and awesome. And this is, I think, the direction that Godzilla, I think, needs to take, at least in terms of the Japanese Godzilla, if they're going to start.
They're going to go in a different direction. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad Legendary Godzilla is Hero Godzilla. I love him for what he is. But yeah, this Horror Godzilla definitely differentiates himself quite well.
Yeah, it's nice to see a rubber suit. I'm a fan of rubber suit Godzilla. Don't get me wrong, I love Legendary's Godzilla a lot. I love everything about the Godzilla in that movie. I like the movie a lot more than Nick did, but
I still own it for what it's worth.
Well, because you like the Godzilla part.
Well, yeah, and I like like the Bryan Cranston parts and the Ken Watanabe parts.
But this is for video viewers, I'm holding up in the center frame where I sit the new leaked Godzilla design. And yeah, looks pretty good. Looks like a rubber suit.
Well, I'm excited because that means we're probably going to get some pretty cool forced perspective shots too.
Well, I'm hoping it's, again, I think I'm torn about Shin Godzilla because, on the one hand, I feel like it's pouting,
mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it's a Godzilla movie, and I like those. So, I mean, it's the Legendary Godzilla. I loved it. wasn't perfect. I have a lot of problems with the lack of characterization in the main character, and especially now that I've seen him in Age of Ultron, like, act and be awesome.
Uh-huh.
So I'm even more disappointed because, like, if he turned out to be a bad act, like, I know I'd already seen him in Kick-Ass 1, you know, 1 and 2, but, like, if he had turned out to, like, just be terrible and not amazing and dynamic when being directed by Joss Whedon, I would have actually felt better. But since, you know, that happened. Oh, well. But I do think this new Godzilla looks good. And I don't know. It's always going to be a challenge. It's going to be what they do with the guy in the rubber suit more than the rubber suit. Because the rubber suits on the old stuff actually don't look bad, but the movies aren't always good. And, well, some
See,
of those rubber suits...
any suit, of the movies from the 70s.
Some of those rubber suits don't look good. Some of them look kind of derpy. But
also see any of the movies from the 70s.
But, like, you know, it's whether or not Godzilla is scary whether or not a rubber suit of Godzilla is scary all depends on how you shoot it. It often depends on how well they do the miniatures around him, which is a really important thing. Like, how you handle miniature destruction in model work. Like, did they slow down footage well enough on explosions to make the realistic distance? Because, you know, when you blow up a small thing, you know, we're still dealing with the same level of gravity as big things, but so the distance is smaller, so everything falls and flies faster per scale, so you need to, you can't make a slower explosion, so you have to slow the film down to make that look realistic.
Last time Higuchi did a Godzilla movie, it was Godzilla, Mothra, and King Ghidorah, which is the scariest Godzilla has ever been in the modern films. If you ask me. Now, a lot of fans don't like that one because in that one, Godzilla is more of a Shinto force of destruction than a nuclear experiment, although it's still part of him. But still, yeah, Higuchi has done scary Godzilla. The factor that's going to be weird is the Anno factor.
Yeah.
Because you have a lifelong Godzilla fan who is also one of the most pretentious directors working anywhere. Being put in charge of this project, and it could go either way.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited, but I'm not excited. as I strongly exhale into my microphone, and I apologize for that.
At the very least, it's going to be really cool to see this thing in action, and
the suit looks good, but I always expected the suit to look good. So it's all going to depend on what they do with the suit.
Hey, there's two, but no matter what, we're going to get two good things out of this. Will there be another Godzilla movie? Yes. Will Hideaki Anno be spending more time working on that and making Evangelion fans suffer more while he puts off the fourth Eva movie some more? Yeah, you bet he will.
Oh, I forgot those were happening.
Has one more to do.
I haven't watched. I made a declaration years ago when they started doing the rebuilds that I wasn't going to watch any of them until they were done.
Yeah. He doesn't have anything out on. Well, the third one got its U.S. release has been delayed by 2 years now. because initially Anno said he didn't like the subtitles. Then I guess Studio Kara said they wanted them to re-record the dub. So it's been delayed.
How do you ask Tiffany Grant to re-record the dub?
Why would you?
Why would you do that?
It happened.
Why would you do that? You're not going to get, she inhabits that character so much at this point that oh my God.
She's friends with the Japanese voice of Asuka.
Well, yeah, no,
it's got to be one of the only cases in the entire world where the Japanese actor and the American actor are actually good friends.
Yeah.
They're buddies. Yeah.
And, you know, Tiffany actually pronounces all the German right.
Go figure.
But it's... how is that not... I don't understand... Okay, I haven't watched any of the rebuilds of Eva because I refuse to watch, I'm willing to watch Eva all over again, but only if it's finished.
There's a new Eva pilot.
I don't accept it.
Who is pandering to the large-breasted girl with glasses demographic.
What's the story behind her mom so that she climbs into her?
Oh, she doesn't have a backstory at all. She just comes in and she's good at literally everything.
What?
Well, she can she makes Unit 2 work better than Asuka can.
But isn't Unit 2 also Asuka's mom?
It's not clear in this version. They've made no hints that the Evas are the kids' moms. For example, when debris almost falls on Shinji during what would be a part of episode one, the Eva doesn't do diddly squat to protect him. So, who knows?
What the fuck? The weird, creepy Oedipal shit is like the core of Evangelion. Go climb back inside your mom is literally like the whole creepy core of the series. If they're not crawling inside of their moms, who are they crawling inside of?
We need to move on.
To be fair, I'm not saying that there's a really good chance that Anno is only doing this because it's a surefire money maker to make sure that old animators stay off the street.
You know why? You know why he hasn't made
arthritis?
The fourth one? You know why he hasn't made the fourth one? He doesn't know he doesn't know what to do.
That's what I haven't watched the third one because I don't watch fan subs these days. I've made that clear. Because if there's going to be a legitimate release, I'm just going to watch the legitimate release. But right, from what I understand, the third one jumped
completely.
Uh-huh. Exactly. But from what I understand, the third one jumped completely off the rails. So who knows? Honestly, who knows?
Dear Lord.
Yeah, apparently, all I know, minor spoilers, I guess there's a time skip, but the kids haven't aged.
Of course not.
Well,
of course not.
It would make a lot of sense if this takes place in the Pokemon universe, I guess.
Okay, we've gone way off. The point is, Hideaki Anno. Oh,
well,
I love him to death, but at the same time, he's crazy.
Speaking of things going off track.
Sure. Oh, anyway, the new Godzilla costume looks terrifying.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about Godzilla. Well, on a completely unrelated note, and I can't make a smooth transition here, so please join me as we now instead go to the world of Star Trek, where CBS and Paramount are now suing the producers of the Axanar fan film that's currently in production. Now, for the longest time, fan films have been kind of an accepted part of fandom, mostly because they are usually amateurish. You know, they almost always have to be given away for – they're given away for free.
Yeah, they don't, they hardly,
you know,
ever,
nobody makes
they
money
never
off
make
of
money
them.
Off the fan films.
But they have a long tradition, and it's always been questionable whether or not it's fair use, because this is actually a whole thing. Now, when distributed for free, there's actually a serious question about whether or not it's copyright infringement. The studios insist that it is. Fan filmmakers say that it's fair use. In some cases, like Lucasfilm actually like set up guidelines for fan films. Like, you can make them if they're this. And it pretty much means that even though, you know, they're still maintaining that they own the copyright, they are giving permission for it. But Paramount and CBS, who now owns Star Trek, has never been, originally it was Paramount, but now CBS, has never been willing to put out a detailed set of rules for fan films, but they've still let them happen. Take the Star Trek Renegades was a high-profile one from not that long ago, which starred actually members of the original Star Trek cast reprising characters, like Tim Russ as Tuvok. And, you know, Walter Koenig reprising Chekhov. They've often, even though these have occasionally gotten more and more bigger productions, they've been still kind of let go. Axanar, which actually they already put out a like half-hour-long short film called Prelude to Axanar, which was set up like a documentary. Axanar is their full-length film that they wanted to create, which is a prequel to Star Trek, the original series. And about a war between the Klingons and the Federation. They have some of the characters. There are a couple actors coming. There actually is quite a few actors from the original series involved, along with some, you know, from other shows. And they had raised over $1 million in crowdfunding to produce this movie. And
it was going to be huge.
Well, and it still might be. Apparently, this has gotten so big and has so many actual professionals working on it that CBS and Paramount have decided to step in.
What?
Now, and they are suing. Now, I understand. Now, the Axanar people talk about how it's a professional level production quite a bit, but it's still being produced like a fan film. In the end, the thing is going to be given away for free to anybody who wants it. And the prevailing theory is just that it's gotten way too big for a fan film, and now that the studio is feeling threatened by this. I've heard some people criticize and say, oh, well, you know, but they're talking about how professional they are and all this stuff and how they want to use it to launch into other projects. Well, actually, I'm sorry, but if you look at the history of fan films, there's a whole history of fan films being produced by aspiring filmmakers who are trying to launch real film careers. Batman Dead End is one of those. There's a great little fan film called Grayson, which is like a Batman fan film about Dick Grayson. That was, again, these people were creating things for their portfolios. And so that's actually kind of a long part of fan films, are professionals trying to launch their careers. So it's,
yeah, like the VFX guy from who did a lot of stuff for that guy with the glasses and was working on Justin Carmichael's Famicom Rider.
Well,
like he w- like yeah. he's trying to get out there with that kind of stuff.
The guys who made Iron Sky, their film before that was a Star Trek fan film, which was a spoof of Star Trek where they had him like fight Babylon 5 and stuff like that. Captain Pirk, I believe, is their main character.
And look where they're on now. Look where they are now. They're getting done with their second movie.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, there's a long tradition of this stuff. But I think that, you know what, I want to point out the big difference is that all those other fan films were usually made while Paramount owned the property. Now that CBS owns the property and Paramount is licensing it from CBS, that's when the lawsuit's happening. Because it has to do with the Viacom split. CBS got to hold on to the Star Trek property instead of Paramount. And Paramount had been the home for Star Trek since Paramount bought Desilu. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's bullshit. I'm just going to say it. Although I will say, if this goes to court and if this doesn't settle and if they fight it, this most actually has a chance of actually setting precedents in copyright about what's legal with a fan film, because it's usually things have just folded, but the Axanar guys, because frankly they've spent like $1 million, you know, folded into this thing.
Right.
And also, what does this mean for Star Trek Renegades, which is raising money for their second episode? And
wait, no one wants the second episode of that?
There are people who liked it. There are people who liked it and want to see Grant Imahara walk around a hologram again. I don't know. That for some reason casts no light on him. That lighting in that scene drove me nuts.
With each of his Mega Man, that same. Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah, with his CGI arm. Yeah. His awful, awful CGI arm. And hey, look, it's just good to know that Sean Young and Edward Furlong aren't dead.
Sure, yeah. We'll go with that. We'll go with that.
But yeah, no. So that's a thing that. But what does that mean for Star Trek Renegades, which also has a high level of, you know, of a high number of professionals in it? It's just not well written, you know, because Axanar actually didn't look bad for most of it, except for the stupid CGI arm. There are just bad decisions made there. Like Renegades with that amount of money could have looked really good. Like Icheb, if you just hand Icheb a gun, like. Don't give him a stupid CGI arm, guys. Just hand him a gun. But anyways, so yeah, Axanar getting sued, and we're going to find out what happens. It's really disappointing because it was actually the clip. Prelude to Axanar was phenomenal. I want to say Prelude to Axanar is the best fan film I've ever seen for Star Trek.
And oh, wow.
If you haven't watched Prelude to Axanar, it's on YouTube right now. Go watch it. It's half hour long. It's so good. And you'll recognize every single actor in it because almost all of them are like, oh, look, it's that guy. And oh, it's the guy who played General Martok. Oh, look, it's, you know, what's his name from Enterprise? Oh, look, it's, yeah. Is Gary Graham just doing, was that the guy's name? The guy who played the Vulcan ambassador in Star Trek Enterprise.
I don't remember the actor's
name. He's just pretty much reprising that character, and then he's also playing one of the leads in Renegades. Is he just doing Star Trek fan films now for a living?
Yeah, might as well.
I'm honestly concerned for his well-being. I don't know.
If you want to get him in your Star Trek fan film, apparently now's the time.
I was going to say. Well, we talked. I think it's enough talk about Trek.
Indeed.
Let's move on to the war in the stars as opposed to the trek through the stars.
Oh.
Yeah, there we go.
Apparently there are still people who get upset about those being compared.
You know what? Okay, I thought you were going to say about talking about it. I'm like, you know what? It's been out almost a month if you haven't seen it yet. I mean, this isn't going to be any spoilers whatsoever. We're going to get to that later. But for now... it's been no surprise. It was not unexpected that Star Wars The Force Awakens was going to make all the money in the entire world. Before the movie even came out, it was breaking records for IMAX theater tickets and ticket pre-sales, making a good portion of, like, not a good portion, but quite a bit of money. when ticket pre-sales went on. So it's no surprise that when it came out, it not only broke the opening weekend record, it broke opening midnight release record, it broke every record. Well, now it's beaten the ultimate record. Yes, this weekend, Star Wars The Force Awakens passed $800 million, which is the biggest domestic box office haul for any movie ever.
In America.
In America. Now, not only that, but we're going to talk a little bit more later about its global reach, but it has overtaken Avatar as the biggest domestic take ever. So, I mean, it's not a shock that this happened, but is it a shock that it happened this quickly, do you think? Because, I mean, the movie's been out, what, 4 weeks?
Yeah, it's, well, and also, like, had the biggest numbers on Christmas Day ever, and it had been out for a couple weeks, and, you know, like, it's been the number one. Yeah, it's huge. I'm not surprised that it was this successful, only I just know that I don't think the Star Wars movies are going to continue to stay at this level now that they're going to dribble out a Star Wars movie every year.
Yeah, do you think a lot of people are going to go see Rogue One?
I don't think anywhere near as many are going to see Rogue One as you saw Episode 7.
I'm curious how many people are going to get confused and go to Rogue One thinking that it's a sequel. Like,
yeah.
No, really, because I, you know.
Well, because they weren't playing up Episode 7 in the title for Force Awakens, because it's, you know, Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
But at the same time, I, you know, we are nerds. We're used to multiple continuities and side stories. Is the Joe Everyman going to understand the
subtlety? Well, it's going to be how they depend on how they market Rogue One. It's all going to be down to the marketing. Yeah. I think that it's all going to depend on how big Star Wars is featured in the title. Like, obviously, in the title for Rogue One, it's Star Wars is tiny in it, as opposed to, like, The Force Awakens, where Star Wars is bigger than The Force Awakens in the title. I like the anthology films, but I do think it was maybe a mistake to run them concurrent with the saga films.
One right after the other.
Every year. I think that's going to get...
I think there's... Stuff. Like, I'm going to love watching all these things, but I think that, First off, Episode 7's high box office takes here on this are partially because it's the first Star Wars movie we've gotten, well, technically since Clone Wars, I guess.
Yeah.
It was in the theaters.
We're going to count that the TV pilot sent to theaters was a movie.
It was in theaters. Oh, my God. Like, I've actually never watched it.
Neither have I.
But I know it happened.
I did a review.
It came to theaters while I was poor. So, but like it's the first saga film we've gotten since Episode 3. So, it's been a long time. So I think there's a lot of pent up like excitement for this movie. Like, you know, I take that back. I saw Guardians of the Galaxy 3 times. I was gonna say I don't see more
yeah,
than
I think
once.
I saw,
but...
I think I saw Guardians of the Galaxy 4 times.
Yeah, I saw Guardians of the Galaxy a lot.
I saw it twice the same weekend. I remember that.
I saw that. Well, but I also, like, I'm weird because if it comes out in the summer, I sometimes end up seeing things more than once because I go to the drive-in.
Right.
And it's like, oh, I could see that shitty movie with...
Wait, Trey, you have a terrible comedy.
Or I could go watch Guardians again.
You have a drive-in in your town? I don't think you've ever mentioned this drive-in before, Trey.
See, you're being sarcastic, but there are new listeners. We have listeners who have never listened to a show where I've mentioned that, so it's been a while.
Listen to the last every episode, guys. You'll get caught up.
I like to go to drive-in movie theaters. There are multiple near where I live.
I'm just bitter because I got to drive past the Eau Claire one, where the Eau Claire one was yesterday. You know what's left? You know the only thing that's left is the box or is the concession stand and projector booth.
Well, they're talking about trying to find new land to rebuild a new one there. So
nice.
It's, well, they spent a lot of money on that digital projector. That digital projector's like super expensive and no one's going to buy it off them. So
they might as well put it to
use. Because to get a digital projector quality enough for an outdoor theater is so much more expensive than digital projectors for an indoor theater. So, yeah. Those things cost like $100,000. So, I expect that movie theater is going to, they're going to find a new home. But, yeah, it's, yeah, I will say, Star Wars, so it's going to, well, episode 8, I think that 7 is going to hold the record for a while, is what I'm saying. Because I don't think it's going to be matched by, well, it's definitely not going to be matched by the anthology films. The anthology films will do well, but they'll do about as well as, say, like, Ant-Man did.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And so I think that they will, you know, they'll be profitable. They'll be entertaining. But I think the saga films, I think, will do larger numbers. But because episode 7 came after such a long gap, I think that episode 8 does not have a chance of doing the numbers that episode 7 did, only because you've got so many people who are like, even the people who don't like episode, my favorite comments are like the people who don't like episode 7. For the record, I loved episode 7.
Oh, I loved it too.
It's now my third favorite Star Wars movie. But there are people who didn't like episode 7 who are still seeing it repeatedly. My favorite comment is like, I just saw it for the fifth time and it gets worse every time. I'm like, why did you see it for the fifth time?
Right.
You dope. Like, I've only seen it twice and I loved it.
It takes me back to, I love it. It's that modern culture we have with the ability to rewatch movies so easily. We get people who are really quick to, well, I shouldn't say quick to critique, who start critiquing things sometimes, I think, more out of overexposure to it than out of the thing's actual merits.
People like to critique things because they think that it's fun to hate things.
Oh, that's absolutely what it is, right?
And I'm fine with critique. Like, if someone didn't like Star Wars The Force Awakens, that's fine. Although, if you're going to, like, put a detailed criticism, please be correct in your assumptions. Because there's nothing worse than people, like, trying to point out plot. They're, like, that HuffPost, the HuffPo article that, like, tried to point out, like, 40 plot holes where that didn't exist if you actually watched the movie. Like, they explain all that. Like, literally all of it. It's not a plot hole if you weren't paying attention. Like, if they say it on screen, it literally cannot be a plot hole. If they explain how it happened, but you just happened to be going to the bathroom right then, that's not a plot hole. That's you peeing.
Into the plot hole.
But yeah, no, it's, I'll say Star Wars The Force Awakens, but it's been... But, you know, the real question is how it's going to do internationally, because it's still behind Avatar, obviously.
Avatar has a nationally $2.788 billion
right.
Worldwide.
Right. Right. And I think that, but Star Wars, while they'd open in large parts of the world and actually is still really highly rated in the, I think it's either like the third total, let me check Box Office Mojo. It only just opened this weekend in China, though, didn't it, Nick?
Yeah, bouncing over to China, which has a really weird history with Star Wars, where the Star Wars movies have never really been big hits over there. Now, is part of that due to, you know, U.S. movies not really having as easy a way of being distributed over in China until fairly recently? Most certainly, yes. And it was interesting seeing the lead up to Star Wars opening in China and some of the weird marketing choices they made. Like, Chewie is not on their posters because for Chinese people, what is a Wookiee? That might they were actually concerned that that would scare people away from going to the movie. Another weird bit about the Chinese release. John Boyega's picture is much smaller.
Well, it's just again, the Chinese are racist.
But more or less, yeah, they were afraid that having a black guy in a major role would also scare people away from going to the movies. Now, despite that, despite racism and Wookieeism,
Kashikism?
Star Wars, what?
Kashikism? Would it be Wookiee? Anyway, sorry.
Star Wars is performing exceptionally well in the Chinese market as well. Who would have guessed?
Yeah, it just opened this weekend.
Yeah, just opened and it's steamrolling. It's beating out other the other releases that have come out over there. Lost the page with how much, but yeah,
$53 million is how much it made this weekend, which is I believe, a record for an opening weekend in China.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and that, okay, so I looked it up, and it's Star Wars The Force Awakens is now the third highest grossing film of all time internationally. It still had Titanic's at 2.18 billion, Avatar 2.7, but Star Wars The Force Awakens, with only having just opened in China, a market of 1 billion people, is, so, and like, literally, like, so think of it as, you know, weeks ago. For how things, mm-hmm. like it's already at 1.7, and it just opened in China, and holy cow.
Well, now, I mean, this, as we've mentioned, I mean, this means that Star Wars worldwide now has 1.73 billion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how many of those, like, and here's what I find interesting about this whole situation, because you look at a movie like Avatar, which, when it came out, nothing was like it at the time. But do you really see anybody talk like it doesn't have as big a cultural impact as, let's say, Star Wars has?
Well, it's because Avatar is really great and impactful on a big screen, which drove a lot of the box office numbers because people saw it more than once because it looked really cool on the big screen. The reason why Star Wars is going to hold up long term, and the way the A New Hope, the reason why Star Wars A New Hope, the, you know, the episode 4 held up long term was not just because it was phenomenal on the big screen, but because it held up as a small screen experience too. You know, let's all three of us, the first time we watched Star Wars was probably on a VHS cassette.
Yep. Actually, yeah. VHS cassette rented from my local grocery store.
Yeah, that's pretty much everybody here, or maybe on TV, you know, in some cases. But still, like, it was on, like, my parents' television until the mid-90s was only, like, that big. Like, it was like, 20 inches. Like, because we had an old TV from the 70s until the mid-90s. So it was like, and I loved every minute of Star Wars on that tiny little television, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's what it's, you know, have you ever watched Avatar on a TV?
Yeah, it's not that impressive.
I have. It's awful. You don't notice how pretty it is. You notice that it's Fern Gully in space.
Exactly. No, and that's what it is.
Like, fine. As a piece of cinema, it's still good cinema, and because if you view films as a piece of art and a visual medium artistically, it is a beautiful film visually. And that's what drove the box office numbers. But the problem is, you know, it's like anything that's just because of the visual, you know, a full-size Van Gogh on your wall is beautiful. The postage stamp version, you're not going to care about. And when that's all that's there to sustain the film is the visual, of course, no, it's not going to develop a standing, long-standing effect on the culture because we can't recreate that at home.
Exactly this. So, Star Wars making a lot of money, still continues to make all the money in the world. Will it hit that $2.78 billion in theaters? Maybe.
But, you know, as much as we love Star Wars, is everything all in well in the world of Star Wars?
No, of course. It's been an ongoing struggle for most Star Wars fans that are collectors of Star Wars merchandise to really find any merchandise prominently featuring Rey, who is arguably one of the main characters of the movie, if not the main character of the movie, some would argue. But at the very least, you'd think you'd have no problem finding her in the Monopoly release of the game, right? Because Monopoly typically has multiple different pieces.
I own the X-Men Monopoly version.
I'm not kidding, I do. All the main character, it's got every character you want, because that's why you buy special edition Monopoly, is to have all the really cool pieces and all that neat stuff. Well,
you definitely don't buy it to play Monopoly.
No, you don't.
Well, somebody does. And then But people who like to play Monopoly buy the special edition Monopoly to trick their friends into playing Monopoly.
Into playing Monopoly, right. Well,
that's the whole point.
The thing is, though, the initial release of the Star Wars special edition Monopoly didn't have Rey. That's right. It had Finn. It had Kylo Ren. It had Luke Skywalker. And it had Darth Vader, who's in the movie as a toaster very briefly.
Well, okay, so it had original Saga.
Rey.
Right. Yeah. It had Finn and it had Kylo Ren from the new movie, and then from the original saga, it had Darth Vader and original saga Luke Skywalker. Let's be clear. It's like Jedi outfit, a Return of the Jedi edit Luke Skywalker, and that's it.
And that's it. Those are the four pieces you got. In the Star Wars The Force Awakens Monopoly. But people noticed, hey, wait a minute.
Who's the main character of The Force Awakens?
The main character is missing. Like, she's on the poster. She's like a third of the poster. And she's not in it. Well, Hasbro released a statement explaining this faux pas, if you will. And it was a statement in which everybody looked at it, said, we're not buying this, and tossed it in the trash. When they said that they didn't want to include Rey because they were afraid it would spoil the movie.
And it was they wrote this in response to an 8-year-old girl asking where Rey was. I want to point
they
out it was
an 8-year-old.
They said
it was a spoiler to have Rey in the set. Well, they have since realized how terrible of an excuse that was and have announced in future editions of Star Wars The Force Awakens Monopoly, they will be releasing, they will be putting a Rey figure in the box. But that really brings, we've known that Hasbro and Disney and it hasn't been great with putting women characters in their collector toy sets. And Trey, I don't know about you, but to me this feels like a turning point.
Well, okay, so there's a complicated thing here. First off, actually, it's surprising because Hasbro actually had been decent about putting out Rey toys to a degree. It's just that they'd been in such high demand that they were selling out immediately.
Yeah, you could find Rey toys, like, as opposed to Black Widow toys, which
right,
you would not
right, because,
find
well,
any of when.
Yeah, it's the other issue here is their spoiler claim doesn't really make any sense, because usually the spoiler claim with this is that they didn't want to release. I will say it is, I know it's technically spoiler that Rey ends up with the lightsaber. But
the movie's
been out long enough. I think it's okay to mention that she ends up being a Force user and uses the lightsaber. They didn't want to put on any toys that had Rey with the lightsaber before the movie came out, just her with the staff. And that's why all the early toys have her with the staff that she uses in the first part of the movie, which is fine. And that's, I think that's great, especially because she can hold the lightsaber if you get that with another figure. But they could have just included Rey with a staff.
Right, or maybe even on her speeder that she has in the beginning.
Well,
as she's
if you look at the figures, that really wouldn't. They're standing figures.
It'd been cool though. You could make it
right,
standing,
but they have to fit on the game board.
You could still fit on the game board.
Not to scale
put,
with the other
they
figures.
They put a car in the an original Monopoly.
The original Monopoly games were made with pieces of a charm bracelet.
Doesn't matter.
Don't bring this weak sauce with me.
Can make it work.
Don't bring this. No, they want all the figures that come with it to be the scale. So just give her a staff and boom, goes the dynamite and you're fine. It's like that's what I don't get about this whole thing. So like they're backpedaling and they're going back, but it's this whole problem with American toys where they market by demographic, where they refuse to view any overlap between boys and girls toys. They want to sell things to boys, they want to sell things to girls, and they refuse to see that it's this bizarre gender splitting of the toy lines. And because Star Wars is used as a boy toy line, they don't want to include girl toys because, first off, they don't believe that girls want to play with these toys, which is stupid and nuts because, let me tell you, and they don't think boys want to play with girl characters, which is also stupid and nuts because Rey is awesome.
Is badass.
Rey is, in my opinion, the best character who's ever been introduced into the Star Wars franchise, and if you disagree, I will fight you. I will fight me.
And not
Bring
only
it.
That, but it's important to have Rey out there. I mean, I took my 6-year-old to see The Force Awakens.
God, she's
and
6 already?
The minute Rey turns on the lightsaber, I thought she was going to lose her damn mind. Like, she was grabbing my arm, and she was like, Daddy, Daddy! Like, that was exciting for her to see, like, a girl character kicking ass like that.
Yeah. No, it was exciting for me to see. And I'm a 35-year-old man.
it's cool to see that. It's incredible that that Hasbro thinks that they're not going to include this, and they gave us that weak excuse of of oh, we don't want to spoil anything. Unfortunately, some bad news. It looks like we've lost Nick for the rest of the episode. So
okay,
Trey and I, feel better soon, Nick.
Yeah.
We'll miss you, buddy.
Let's see here. What do I got
like
here?
Looks like it's just going to be me and Trey for the rest of this.
Oh, crap. That's the wrong camera.
No, Trey, fix it.
I'm working on it. Oh, God. It's all broken.
We can leave Nick up. I don't mind.
Nick will be up on screen because he's here in our hearts.
In our hearts. But he's physically in the bathroom.
It screws up everything when I go to your one shot now.
It'll be okay. We'll make it work. We've only had a couple stories left to cover, plus
the
mailbag. So, but anyways, unfortunate that Hasbro kind of did that. But we will see Rey in future editions of Star Wars: The Force Awakens Monopoly as they get released and I don't know, knowing Star Wars fans and knowing their rabid fandom, I imagine a lot of people are going to have duplicates of the Star Wars The Force Awakens Monopoly sets in their homes.
That's the whole thing. It's like they can't replace it immediately because, you know.
They still got to get rid of all the.
They got to get rid of all the existing ones.
So we'll probably get it in mid-2016, I would think.
Yeah.
Anyways,
let's talk about something
else.
Let's
talk about something that we really like. Well, we really like everything, but
here, let me finish writing something on the screen
not
here. For
here,
the show.
Not here, right now.
There. Now the video's better. All right, so let's talk about something awesome, and that is No Boys Dorm.
Yeah,
No Boys Dorm.
Let's talk about it because it's great. And
actually, we'll just cut to one shots. No Boys Dorm is, of course, the new web series put out by the people who produced the My Immortal web series. My Immortal web series was, of course, based off of the infamous My Immortal fan fiction that was written 10 years ago this year. Oh my God,
we're old.
We're all old and going to die soon. Anyways, No Boys Dorm is their first original series. And it premiered, actually, you know, we would have talked about it last episode because it premiered, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks, I don't know. It new episodes air on Monday. And so episode 4 is coming out tomorrow.
Which
three episodes have aired so far. We would have talked about it last episode, but we were doing our best of 2015 special, so we couldn't.
It was probably the best original series premiere of 2015.
Yeah, but I think we'll end up talking about it in our 2016 episode. anyways, the No Boys Dorm is, of course, heavily based on shoujo anime.
Oh, boy, is it ever.
And it is about Larno, who left behind a life of crime, and then her apartment burned down, and she's now living with her brother in his dorm room, but she had to pretend to be a student at the Illustrious Academy, which is really the University of Toronto, but whatever. And she's, at least that's what the IDs all say. And but to stay in the dorm, she has to pretend to be the girlfriend of this other student, Takashi. And it's there's her rival, Teela Tether. Every trope you could imagine.
Not only does it hit every trope, but it kind of hits every trope out of the park.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I am so impressed, like, watching it. I couldn't stop laughing when at the end of the first episode, the girlfriend boyfriend thing. I don't want to spoil too much, but like, I laughed, I think, harder than I've laughed throughout the entire series when that bit happened at the end of episode one, because that was pretty much like and right straight out of the pages of a shoujo.
Well, and there's a lot of falling on other people too.
Yeah, there's that. Like
Laura knows instinct is to fall on you. No,
she's klutzy. She's a klutz, you know.
Everyone's a klutz. It's shoujo. And you know, there are great clever things like naming the Moe character Mo. And
yep.
but there's a lot of alumni from the My Immortal web series are back in this thing. The lead actress, Tavia, I've got to pull up her last name here because I don't remember what it was. She actually played a minor role in season two of My Immortal as, I think, the Queen of Cups. The Queen of Cups. But it's she plays Lara No, and she's fantastic. I love her in this. But you get a lot of other people like Media Junkie Studios, who's the group that Media Junkies who puts this out. And we've had Brian McClellan, the guy who wrote this, on the show before when talking about My Immortal back in the day. But Mo is played by Candace Meeks, who you would have also remembered from the My Immortal web series, where she played two different characters in that.
She was also she's the producer.
Yes, yep. I was getting there. Also, you get Joseph Bradley, who played Harry Potter in My Immortal. He's playing Isaac, and he's fantastic.
A lot of shirtless him in episode three.
Yeah. Also returning is Jenna Foster Catlack, who's playing Alba Marta. She was Hermione in My Immortal, and she is the definitive Hermione for me. I was ecstatic when she came on screen at the opening of episode two. Nick Newcastle will be appearing. He's only appeared a little bit in the three episodes that have aired. It's a 6-episode season. Only three episodes have aired. The fourth episode is airing tomorrow for us when we record this, but since we record this Sunday nights and many of you don't listen to this until Monday, it might already be out when you're hearing this.
If it is, watch it.
Watch it.
But watch the first three first, I guess.
There are also some other people playing, some more minor roles from some of the other people who are like less notable in My Immortal are also in this thing, where Tanya Casol Govella, who played what's her name, Draco's mom.
There's Lucius, and Lucius is his dad. I don't remember.
I don't know Draco's mom. She's in this as Molly Ann, and she's hilarious. Michael Dembski is appearing as Marin Marcus. He played a minor character in the first season of My Immortal. And then there's a lot of just like genius members of the cast. I love Ray Chayas Martin.
Oh, dude, I was just about to talk about him.
Ray Chayas Martin as the Martin. RA. We put him in the title card of the episode. We like him so much.
Well, there's that, and I mean, you got first off, like, I don't know how many of the Media Junkies people listen to us, but if Allison Davis maybe wants to like hang out ever,
run for is super into you, and that's not good for any of us.
If he ever wants to just hang out or anything like that, like I'm okay with it. I'm okay with hanging out with the character Jason. Like, I'm down with that.
So yeah, it's I have a lot of thoughts on the series. I mean, it's not perfect. It's obviously media junkie stuff tends to be made with very tiny budgets, you know. So it sometimes shows. Sometimes the ADR isn't perfect. Sometimes the recording of the theme song drives me nuts every episode, and it's because I'm a snob and like. Let me tell you, if you hear audio, you will hear audio imperfections of Nerd in Time when you listen to it, and they all drive me nuts. Every single one of them. So when I hear like bad recordings, it kind of just goes, you know. Meh.
I gotta say though, I mean, like I'm a very visual person, and visually to me, No Boys Dorm is phenomenal. I don't like. Props to the directors and whatnot, because some of the framings of these shots are so perfect and visually pleasing.
I'll say the static shots I think are all well framed. I think all the shots are well framed. I think that again you get budget issues where, you know, they obviously can't afford a Steadicam, you know, because that costs like more than their entire budget for the show probably. And, you know, it's, you know, things like dollies that work well and things like that. There were a couple of moments in the first episode where I wish they just would have slapped it on a tripod, where they were clearly working handheld, and I just wish they would have slapped it on a tripod. But this is all nitpicking. Like, I can nitpick anything to death, but overall, I love this thing. The first episode I thought was very good. The second episode wasn't as strong, but the third episode I think was really good also. overall, I am on board for No Boy Storm. That's why we've been doing recaps. Or I say we, I mean I. But
well, I've been watching.
First, been reading them.
And I've also been watching the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, we're all watching the show. Yes. Yeah. But it's if you want to know my full detailed thoughts about every single episode, we're doing recaps. We did the first episode as a recap on its own. Episodes 2 and 3 had a combined recap. Episodes 4 and 5 are going to have a combined recap, and then we'll do episode 6 will have its own recap along
nice
with
finale.
The final thoughts about the season. So
I'll probably put in an edit for the final thoughts because
we'll ask Nick and Fur to write stuff for the final recap. For their thoughts about the series, but
honestly, you should be watching this show. It's free online. Feel free to watch it. You should be watching it. It's great. It's well acted. The visual thing and what has impressed me a lot too is how snappy everybody is with their dialogue.
Yeah. The acting is great.
Crisp, and the acting is great, and the dialogue is great, and it's their delivery is so close to perfect. Like
Well, it's the performances are what make or break a series like this. It's zero budget and low budget shows all hang on whether or not the cast can carry it. And obviously the writing is very important there too. The writing and the cast carry the whole thing then. And both of those are very solid on this show. So
watch it.
Watch it. And Martin is the best thing that's ever happened.
God, he's great.
Ray Chaya's Martin is my
he's
reason
phenomenal.
For being. If you haven't watched, you need to watch the show.
He could be a villain in like anything, but like the best part about it is like he wouldn't be like a bad villain. I think he'd be like that villain that's like trying to be evil, but always ends up like just like causing minor annoyances than anything. And
oh man, it's just I just love him so much.
Oh, that's great.
And seeing Joseph Bradley with his shirt off made me feel very fat, but.
Call me.
Oh dear Lord.
Anyways,
we should move on to the mailbag.
We need to open up the mailbag, and I will start off with a letter, and I guess Trey, you get the other one now, or should
yeah.
I just?
I'll take Archimizes.
All right, sounds good. All right, our first letter comes from Langland, and his subject is "It's a New Year." He says, "Hey homies, I hope you have an awesome New Year's, spending it with your loved one that you guys have."
Yeah, all one of them.
I hope you guys have. Well, it was very nice. Lily got back from Australia, and we got to have a nice New Year's Eve in. Trey, I think you had a nice New Year's Eve in, right?
I think so.
You watched. I thought you said you watched Jane the Virgin, and Lily and I ended up watching.
No, I don't remember.
We ended up watching The Last Man on Earth. So both of us.
I watched a bunch of Jane the Virgin, then I watched The Ball Drop.
Yeah. That was it. So
I'm an
anyway,
old man. My wife and I are boring.
I think we were asleep by midnight too. So we're old and boring too, apparently. I hope you guys have an awesome 2016. I things work out for all three of you and that things get better if they haven't already. I'm going to skip this next part because we already said that we wouldn't talk about it. Anyways, I just know that no matter what happens this year, never lose your optimism. I know some of you have had battles with depression, and it's a bitch, but don't ever lose hope. No matter what, we're all in this together. Yeah, I'm ripping off a Canadian TV show that's on PBS on Saturdays, but it's a good message. 2016 will be a good year for all of us. You guys are starting a new con, and it's going to be awesome. That's a lot of awesome movies coming out to theaters to see, and it will be fun. Don't let the bad things get you down, and you will all get through this. Oh, shoot. I'm fighting a stupid citation I got back in October, and I have my court case in February, and I'm staying optimistic that law will be reasonable to me. Overall,
oh my God.
I'm glad you're doing well, Langland.
We love you, Langland.
It will be an awesome year for all of you. Just keep your stick on the ice. Keep on swinging. Take those shots because Wayne Gretzky always says you will miss all the shots you don't take. You will miss a lot of them, but you will eventually score. Peace out, bros. Gandhi. I mean, Langland.
We love you, Langland.
Thank you, Langland.
Langland's a person.
For that.
And he said things. All right.
We're glad you've got our back, Langland. Thank you.
Yeah. Actually, yes. Yes, we are. So I've got a letter here from Mr. Brian Novak, also known as Archimize. Hey, the subject, unlikely upsets in fictional combat. Hey, Nerd and Tie team, after watching The Force Awakens, I thought it would be fun to check out some of the other Star Wars media. So I've been working my way through The Clone Wars, the 3D one with Kenobi's wooden beard, not to be, you know, confused with the Getty Tarkovsky one. It's been pretty solid so far with some great story arcs in Season 3. But what I'd like to talk about are quote-unquote unlikely upsets. In the original Star Wars trilogy, we saw, spoilers, little teddy bears defeat a garrison of hardened stormtroopers. Similarly, in an early episode in Season 4 of Clone Wars, we see General Grievous get taken down by, spoilers, Gungans! It's hardcore, too! They impale him on a spear and everything!
Yeah, he linked to the video of it. Man, yeah.
That's how he got the Roboasmum. Here's the link for the non-believers. It's a YouTube link.
And it's hardcore. It's as hardcore as he says it
is. If I remember to throw that in the show notes, I will. With that pleasant imagery in your mind, I was curious. It was a kids' show too. With that pleasant imagery in your mind, I was curious what other unlikely upsets the team knows about in movies, shows, or fiction in general. Historical ones are always fun too. That's all for this week. Best of luck with the legal stuff. Oh God, sorry, Arkhamize.
Well, I mean, if you want, in fiction, one of the greatest, like, upsets, I guess you could, I mean, I'm looking right at it here on my bookshelf, H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
I would call that an upset because, I mean, we were technically beat by the Martians, but thankfully Mother Nature kind of came to our rescue and
Deus Ex Machina
saved us in that one. Gosh.
Well, yeah, it's, you know, never really paid attention. I mean, like, if you want, like, there's, like, improbable events, like the assassination of Franz Ferdinand in history. Because that one was a cluster mess of failed assassination attempts and coincidence. Usually in actual life, there's rarely an upset. Like, you know, because, yeah, the Americans fought off the British and won in the Revolutionary War, but it was also because the British were also simultaneously fighting the French.
And really didn't care at that point, yeah.
It's not really an upset so much as they were diverted, you know, like they couldn't concentrate on it. So that was more that an equal force met a equal force or smaller force, like, or less powerful force. That's not really an upset. It would have been more of an upset, actually, if the British had won. Yeah, you know, I don't think that the Ewoks are an unlikely upset in many ways against the Stormtroopers because they don't blow up the Death Star. You know, they take out some guys on the ground in home territory using guerrilla tactics. That's pretty standard stuff. And while it's true that they beat Stormtroopers at that point in the trilogy, by the time you get to Jedi, Stormtroopers are so nerfed and useless. Like, Stormtroopers are only good at their job when they're off screen, like,
yep.
And that's when they're killing unarmed farmers.
And we actually get to, anyways, we get to see them be good at their job in Force Awakens.
I like to ride on the desert, you know, like to glide. I'm a speeder, no hope that I don't find what I don't want to find. What's around waiting around the corner? Oh, no, no. Okay, so.
Yeah, I mean, typically speaking, like, I hate to ruin it for everybody, but typically speaking, the underdog story doesn't happen 9 out of 10 times. Occasionally, the U.S. team will beat Iceland.
Yeah, I guess it happens in sports movies a lot.
Yeah, like, the U.S. will beat Iceland.
That's true.
Numerous times. Nine times out of 10, they'll beat Iceland, even though they're, you know,
yeah,
even though they're the underdog. But in real life,
right,
typically that giant army is going to crush the
like,
people using slingshots.
I like Major League. Like, I guess that's an unlikely Major League, Bad News Bears. But, you know, even the best sports movies don't really work out like that. Slapshot.
Yeah.
That's just, it takes his clothes off. I mean, it doesn't really count as, like, a victory. Go watch Slapshot. Great movie. I don't even like hockey, and I love that movie.
Take us to the Vomit Hat Steve letter.
The Vomit Hat Steve challenge!
Let's go to it.
So, for those of you who are unaware, every episode we do a little thing called the Vomit Hat Steve challenge, where At this point in the episode, after the mailbag, I read off a section of a book, and the challenge to you, the listener, or what viewer, I guess in this case also, because we're on video now, the challenge to you is to guess what book I am actually reading from. If you guess it right, if you go in and you guess it right, we add you to the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. You get your name read aloud every regular episode. 2, you get your name listed on the website. And 3, that's it. Stop being so greedy. It's a game. You don't get mad if you don't win anything after playing Risk. So, the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkami, Zero, Rena Innocenti, Cheesy McDamu, Krista, Slitheridi, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lily Soros, Paper Godzilla, Cavzy, and Minnesota Librarians. Now,
the newest member.
Who are the newest? Yeah, but this is their second episode getting listed as members. So, we started a new book last episode. Corfan sent in a guess that is so wrong, I won't embarrass him by saying what book he thought it was.
It wasn't even close, buddy.
It was not even
in the same ballpark. Oh.
So the line for you all at home. He was never destined to win a Father of the Year trophy, even when he had spare time on his hands. If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com and click on the contact form. Or if you have anything else you'd like to tell us, click on the contact form. Tell us how great you think we are. Tell us why you think Martians would not get wiped out by the common cold. Tell us why you think Langland has amazing hair. Do all of this and more. Just go to nerdandtie.com/contact or click on the contact link on the page and send us your crap and we'll talk about it.
And as always, if you have any news story tips or anything you'd like us to maybe look into and maybe cover on our blog, always feel free to write to us at tips@nerdandtie.com.
That's because that's the tips address.
Yep.
Just the tips.
Just the tips.
Oh, dear Lord. Okay,
as always, thank you very much for joining us on this Fortnight of Nerd and Tie. You can check us out on our website as well, nerdandtie.com, for all stories. And as always, check out the off week, which is going to be next Sunday or next week as well, in between fortnights. And be on the lookout for other really cool stuff that's coming to us from us to you this year in 2016. For Nerd and Tie, I'm Firsters.
I'm Trey Dorn. Nick Azumi was with us. Say crap
but
down.
He's still with us in spirit, but we're just...
Yeah, he had to go. But also remember to subscribe to us on Stitcher and on iTunes. Rate and review us. Or also you can subscribe to us at any podcatcher that can take an RSS feed. We'll be listed in Google Play as soon as they launch their podcast subscription. So you can subscribe to us there too, Android users. And, you want to say next catchphrase?
Keep on spocking in the free world.
Yeah. All right. Dear Lord.
Stay alone.